Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
He got him in the white trunks. He hurt him.
That's beautiful. Oh, God. That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count. Wow. And here comes a Mitchell. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to another edition of the MMA Report podcast. I am Jason Floyd, and come up here on this edition of the podcast, you are going to hear my conversations with Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations Director Mike Mazzulli, as he is going to explain exactly what happened with the suspension of Henry Hoof and Greg Jones for violating the COVID protocols as they were there working the corner of Jason Jackson. Also, going to let you hear my conversation with Parker Porter, who's going to have his second fight in the UFC next weekend, UFC Vegas. Number 15, going to be taking on Josh Parisian. Had a great conversation with him as we talked about, everything that's been happening with him since making his UFC debut there on short notice. And also during that conversation, he's going to explain to you why he always was, because I asked him, I said, hey, was Josh Parisian on your radar? And he said, yeah, Josh Parisian's always been on radar. So those conversations will come up here momentarily. Of course, I am recording this podcast here on late Friday morning, of course, the day after Bellator 253, which, of course, last night there at the Mohegan Sun. And, you know, really, I mean, obviously the storyline of the card is what AJ McKee was able to do in the main event, making short work of Darian Caldwell, pulling off that submission, and, is now advanced on to the finals of the Featherweight World Grand Prix. And as I tweeted last night, the Bellator fight that I want to see the most right now is AJ McKee versus Patricio Pitbull. But, of course, Patricio is going to have to get through Emmanuel Sanchez before that fight could potentially happen. But man, the best way to describe what we saw last night from AJ McKee was just wow. I mean, that's about the best way that you can put it. Wow, what a performance there by AJ McKee. But after the co-main event was over, I put up a statement from Mike Mazzulli in relation to what happened with Jason Jackson. It has his seconds, aka his cornerman, Henry Hoof, and Greg Jones were suspended 3 months by the commission and fined $500 each for violations of the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations COVID-19 protocols. And this was a statement from Mike Mazzulli last night. Of course, you're going to hear from him momentarily giving some more details on this, where he says, quote, "It came to the attention of the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations that Henry Hoof and Greg Jones did not adhere to the quarantine requirements. So therefore, they will be suspended for 3 months and fined $500 by the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations for violating of the COVID-19 protocols. It should be noted that both Hoof and Jones tested negative for COVID-19 before working the corner of Jason Jackson. In today's environments, it's a serious violation and will not be tolerated in the future. If either of the corners had tested positive for COVID-19, Jackson's fight tonight against Benson Henderson would have been canceled. Now, I will tell you, so obviously I heard about this yesterday, as the fights were happening. And, the protocols, and I said this to someone else in the industry last night because we were texting about it, and I said, I think a lot of people do not understand how involved Viacom was in setting these protocols. If you may remember when Bellator announced they were going to start doing these events in their bubble there at the Mohegan Sun, I put out exactly what the protocols were, and you're going to hear Mike Mazzulli talk about the protocols, but here's the thing. You want to know how Mike Mazzulli and the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations found out that Henry Hoof and Greg Jones violated the COVID protocols? A social media post. Yeah, they put it on social media that they were training. So that is how this all came to light. So I think that's when I heard that aspect of this story, I was dumbfounded. I was like, they seriously went on social media and they told them themselves. So that is exactly how the commission found out about this and how we got to this point. Now, I will tell you, in the conversation that I had with Mike Mazzulli this morning, he does explain why Jason Jackson is the one who has to pay the fine of $1,000 total, $500 for each of his coaches. And you're going to hear in this conversation where Mike told Jason, he said, if one of your corners tests positive, your fight's off. You're not getting paid. And so, you know, and I understand, look, there are some people that, you know, they may not like what Mike, you know, how Mike does things, but, you know, Mike is what he's doing, what he feels is best for the sport. And, you know, look, we're in a different world these days. You know, it's just a different world. And, you know, you look at, you know, the success that Bellator has had with their bubble. You know, we joke about every time there's a card in Vegas for the UFC that, oh, you know, there's a good chance that you're probably going to lose one or two fights within the week due to COVID. And that just really hasn't happened. I mean, the only times I can think of was a couple weeks ago when they lost two fights, when it was Nick Newell and I want to say Vita Ortega had both tested positive. So, you know, so I reached out to Mike and said, hey, you know, can I get a couple minutes to talk about, you know, exactly what happened? And he granted me that. So I'm going to let you hear my conversation with Mike Mazzulli right here. Along with talking about the COVID protocols and everything happened with Jason Jackson, we also talked about instant replay in combat sports. Joining me now is the man who runs the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations, Mike Mazzulli. Of course, we had a little news come in after the fights on Thursday night in relation to Jason Jackson's cornermen, Henry Hoof and Greg Jones. Of course, by now, everyone's has heard exactly, you know, the suspension and whatnot. But let me just kind of start off here about the process of the bubble. When a fighter or their seconds, or most people would refer to as their cornermen, What is that process, Mike?
Well, you know, first of all, thank you for having me. And, you know, I like to explain myself on why I did this. You know, it's not something I enjoy. It's not something that, I get like excited about. But first of all, I got to commend, I will commend Bellator and their processes and how they handle these seconds and fighters. I wrote the protocol up last July. June. It was June when I needed to write the protocol up to get him up to the Viacom. So you got to remember, too, it's just not Bellator. You have Viacom that has protocols as well, which follows and mirrors my protocols. So it's a pretty interesting process. What happens is when before a fighter or a second gets on a plane, they are COVID tested wherever they are located. Upon arriving here, they get COVID tested again, and they stay quarantined. So, for example, Mr. Jones arrived here a day before Mr. Hoft. Mr. Jones was tested in the morning, at which point he's supposed to quarantine. Mr. Hoft flew in and wasn't even tested at the point that he was training Mr. Jackson in a hotel room. Now, I'm not even going to address the fact that they decided to move the beds out of the way and make it into a training room. That's a no-no when it comes to the operation side here at Mohegan Sun Casino. But when it comes to the bubble, they didn't adhere to it. The way I found about it, Jay, is the fact that one of them posted it on social media. So I always tell these kids ahead of time, be careful what you do, because I'm not a big social media guy, but my kids are, and they follow the sport. And that's where I got a heads up on one of my son. I said, hey, Dad, look at this. So be smart. Don't be stupid. So that's how that came to my attention.
So basically, if they don't post this on social media, nothing ever happens.
Well, let's just say if I found out about it any other way, there would be a problem. But I did locate it on social media, you know, that's where it came from. And that's what I had to address it. Of course I had to address it. I went to Bellator with it. Bellator was like appalled. They said, you do what you have to do. And it's interesting, you know, I find, well, back up a little bit at the weigh-in, Mr. Jackson comes in, he gets on the scale, he makes weight. I take him off out of the room and I said, we have a little problem. And I explained what occurred, and he was a complete gentleman. 100% gentleman. He took responsibility for it all. I said, well, it's not necessarily your fault. It's your corner. He's like, no, it's my fault. I said, yep. I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to fine you $1,000. And I know there's a lot of press out there and a lot of people saying, why are you fining the fighter $1,000? Well, my opinion is that the fighter's responsible for his seconds. The fighter's responsible for his career. He needs to know what you can and cannot do. Bellator even goes so far as provide each corner their own dressing. Their own hotel room. So there's no cross contamination. Because Jay, what would have happened if Mr. Jones tested positive and Mr. Hoff and Mr. Jackson was negative? Mr. Jones would have been going home. He wouldn't have worked the corner. But since he was working out with the fighter while he was waiting, while he was supposed to be in quarantine, if he tested positive, all three of them would have been gone. No questions asked. And then with that said, I said to Mr. Jackson, I said, you understand that if that happened, I cannot make Bellator pay you. Bellator is not obligated to pay you if you didn't adhere to the COVID restrictions.
In terms of the protocols, because I think a lot of people just don't understand exactly what kind of that entails. You know, me being, you know, working for an NFL franchise, I know all about protocols and what has to be done. But and you mentioned a little earlier, and I think it's kind of the fascinating part of this, and I don't know how many of people who are working corners understand this, of how involved Viacom was in these regulations.
Well, I'll tell you, it's extremely they're extremely involved in it. It's a multi-billion-dollar company. I sent my protocols to Bellator and Showtime Boxing, because we have Showtime Boxing here as well, and they forwarded it to Viacom. And I my email to them was, this is my protocols. If you want to go above and beyond my protocols, you can. Now, you have to remember that I have Dr. Michael Rajkumar, who's an infectious disease doctor, who helped me write them. What they did was, Bellator decided on their own to go out and hire Harford Healthcare that was going to administer the COVID testing, and they have been all along. And I have to tell you, I am extremely, extremely satisfied with the way Harford Healthcare, as well as Bellator and Showtime, has handled themselves. I mean, this is the first time I was aware of an issue. Has it happened in the past? I don't know. But I can tell you that if either of these three guys were positive, they wouldn't have been fighting. The fight wouldn't have happened. I mean, and what bothers me the most is these trainers don't understand the consequences. Mm-hmm. Mr. Jackson wasn't going to be able to fight. Plus, he wouldn't have won. Plus, he wouldn't have gotten paid. So, you know, it's a big deal. Listen, this is an epidemic. It's a public perception. And if you – and I say this in my rules meeting, Jay, every week when Bellator or Showtime come here, I don't care if you believe in this. I don't care if you think it's crazy. I don't care at all your opinions on it. But you will wear this mask. You coming here to get paid. You're coming here to do a – it's a business trip. Just like when you and I, like, you fly up to Detroit for a Buccaneers game, you're doing it for business. Mm-hmm. You're not doing it for anything else. You know what I mean? It's a business trip. So listen to the protocols, adhere to the requirements, and everything will go smooth. Well, these 2 seconds felt they were bigger than the quarantining and the protocols. And the interesting thing is, I've been hearing that, oh, they didn't know about it. That is a complete joke. Because Bellator explains exactly what you're doing before you even get here.
Yeah, no, I think especially, you know, I know I was reading the article that Nolan King had wrote on MMA Junkie. And one of the things, and I know this, you had known this to me as well, is that, you know, look, this will go into the ABC registry. And any concern that other commissions won't honor it?
I can only hope that they will. I know I would honor it if the shoe was on the other foot. You know, I was president of the ABC for 4 years, and the organization is great. We've never had any problems like that before, but we will see. You know, unfortunately, you know, Mr. Jones and Mr. Hoff can say what they want to say. They didn't know about it. It was, you know, it was unfortunate, and, you know, I can't believe I'm getting fined, I'm getting suspended. But at the end of the day, it's a worldwide pandemic that's occurring here. Mm-hmm. And just think, if they were positive and they sat back of the house with all my inspectors and all my officials, and then they come cage side and do the same thing, what would happen then? You know, it's be responsible, would you please, is my thing. Be responsible. I don't like it. Do I believe in it? I don't even know if I believe in this whole thing and how we're handling it. But with that said, these are the requirements. This is what we're doing. And end of discussion. It's black and white. It's black and white. And Bellator has gone so far to say, hey, listen, if you need food, we're going to deliver it to your room while you're in quarantine. I mean, that's how minute these guys have thought about this stuff. Yeah. I mean, Scott Coker, Rich Chow, Michael Kogan, you know, they have runners that are running food to their rooms, leaving them outside the rooms while you're quarantined. And then when you're not quarantined, you have two places to be, your room or in the arena training. They go so far as giving each fighter an area on the concourse that's not just their dressing room during the fight, but it's also their training room. And there's no other place. They have three treadmills on each side in the red and the blue corners, three bicycles. They have a guy sitting there that's cleaning in between scheduled training times. I mean, and after you leave your dressing room, they clean the dressing room. I mean, they're spending a lot of resources to do this right. And I knock on wood every day. We've been doing this since July 24th with Showtime and Bellator, and we've had no issues. You know, we've had some positives, absolutely, but we have a protocol on how we handle it in the hotel rooms. I mean, we've been doing this so long, and then these two gentlemen want to come in here and think they're bigger than the sport, and that bothers me as well. No one's bigger than the sport. I've always said that. Fair play and safety is the most important in my eyes, and you don't have to like me, Jay. A lot of people don't like me. I really don't care, but when you come here, you know what you're going to get from me.
Yeah, and I know this, I know some people that don't like you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, you're the regulator. Let me ask you something not related to all
this.
But
I'm a regulator. No, but when you said that, Jay, I agree. I'm a regulator, but I'm fair.
Yeah.
And if that person that doesn't like me and is a fighter and calls me up and asks me to take care of some medicals for him because he's fighting in Cali with Andy Foster, I'm the first one to say, yeah, I pick up the phone any time of the day. You know that. Mm-hmm. Because I love the sport and I love what I do and I love the fighters. That's, you know, at the end of the day, I care for every fighter that gets in that cage. They should have the same opportunity to win the fight as their opponent, and they all should both walk out of the cage and be able to continue their careers.
Let me ask you something, not relation to this, but just kind of what we're seeing kind of on the regulatory side of things. Of instant replay has become a huge talking point. We saw what happened last weekend in Nevada with how long it came to them to come to a decision. In terms of instant replay, because obviously we're Bellator. I want to say I saw one of the Bellator employees on Facebook note just finished up 9 shows in 9 weeks, excited to go home. But and of course, you know, Bellator will be back at your place on December the 10th. Like, if there is an instance where replay has to be used, how does it work with your commission?
Well, that's a great question, because I've had instant replay for years, and I'll go back to an ESPN fight when Delvin Rodriguez fought here, and this is quickly, I'll go through it. Delvin was fighting here. The fight was stopped by Doc Harvey, Harvey Doc thought there was a headbutt. So we were going through the scorecards. It's after 4 rounds were complete. I think it was a 10-round fight. And I said, well, let's pull up the instant replay. Come to find out, instead of going to the scorecards and having Delvin win by a technical decision, it wasn't a headbutt. It was actually a punch that actually TKO'd him. So he won by TKO. So I've had instant replay on the books for me for the last, it's got to be, that had to be 8, 9, 10, 11 years ago. I don't even remember. But when it comes to MMA, the same thing. And you can see during a fight, I'm very intense at the cage. And sometimes people will say I'm an asshole and I'm too intense. But this is the reason why I'm intense at watching a fight, either MMA or any combative sports. I'm always watching what's occurring, because what I do is I require my officials to yell out in the middle of a round, accidental headbutt. So I write down the time. So with that said, if something happens, in an MMA fight in the third round, okay, after two rounds are complete, we go to the scorecards in the third round. So let's say in the third round, Jay, you and I go out, and I throw two or three punches at you, and then the fight stops because an accidental headbutt the referee calls, and I can't see out of my eye because the blood's gushing down over my eye. The doctor decides we want to stop it. And I go back and review that and say, whoa, one second here. That wasn't an actual headbutt. That was a blow. So I lose the fight. Jay wins the fight because it's a TKO loss. Now, let's change the scenario around a little bit more. The first round happens. Accidental headbutt occurs. The referee calls out 123 accidental headbutt. Okay? The fight continues. We get into the third round. Okay? Due to the accidental headbutt, the doctor stops the fight for some reason, for, you know, whatever the reason is. I go back and look at 123. This will take me less than 5 minutes. I go back, look at 123, or actually even in between the rounds, I look at 123 to see if it's actually a headbutt or not. All right. And if it's no headbutt, you win by TKO, not going to the scorecards because the referee announced that time. So I'm able to go back in real time and see that exact moment where the foul supposedly occurred. And I think that's what happened in Las Vegas. It didn't happen that way. You know what I mean? I think Mr. Mora yelled accidental headbutt after the fact, and they couldn't locate the time. So that's why I'm so focused during the fights. And it's funny because even my chief inspector will come up and ask me something. I'm like, hey, listen, man, I'm paying attention because I wanted to be fair. You know what I mean? And this instant replay works great if it's done properly.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest complaint, you know, outside of how it kind of all played out was more of a, you know, a time thing. I mean, obviously, I come from an NFL world where, you know, the goal is to have it, you know, done within 2 minutes where, you know, hey, the action continues. I think that's the biggest thing. But I thought, you know, fans would be interested to know kind of exactly how it does work under your protocol. And but of course, it was a great night of fights there on Thursday night. AJ McKee, man, what was the submission he had there? And you had a front row seat to us. So Mike, as always, man, appreciate the time. And of course, I'm sure something will come up and we'll be talking down the line, man.
Anytime, brother. I appreciate it. Have a good Thanksgiving.
And there you have my conversation with Mike Mazzulli. I really appreciate Mike giving me a couple minutes here to talk about what happened on Thursday night at Bellator 253 in relation to his decision to suspend Greg Jones and Henry Hooft for violating the COVID protocols. And, you know, look, you hear him mention the fact of he found out via social media that they violated these protocols, even noting how they moved the beds around inside the room. But also you hear about how he said, you know, Jason Jackson was tremendous to, you know, talk with him about. And Jason Jackson understood exactly what happened there. And you know, for the people to say, hey, why is it Jason Jackson's fault in terms of the fines? You know, you hear Mike sit there and say, at the end of the day, the fighter is responsible for his cornermen. Also, you know, very interesting the fact that you hear Mike say Bellator pays for the hotels for each cornerman to have their own room. So I think that's very interesting to kind of hear there and obviously get his takes on instant replay. We saw the debacle of instant replay last weekend at the boxing show there in Las Vegas. And, you know, it's, you know, I mean, look, replay should not take, I mean, what, I think it was, what, 26 minutes it took? Just, I mean, just crazy that it took that long. So, you know, really, you know, it's, you know, look, a lot of regulators don't do interviews. It's just they just don't do it. So I really do appreciate Mike taking some time out of his day to talk to me about what happened on Tuesday, on Thursday night, and also, you know, giving us a peek into exactly what the protocols there are inside the Bellator bubble. Of course, Bellator had a great night last night. I mean, that was a fun fight card to watch. You know, I watched in terms of watching it live. You know, sometimes I don't always watch, you know, the events all entirely live. Sometimes, you know, some of it I watch live, and then, you know, there's other aspects that I go back and after the fact, and I'll I'll watch it and see how things go on. But I did watch the entire main card live last night. You know, obviously the story is definitely AJ McKee with what he was able to do with that submission. Man, just unbelievable what he was able to do there with Darren Caldwell, only needing 71 seconds there to get the win in the first round with the neck crank there. Just an amazing submission that he was able to pull. You know, Jason Jackson, you know, obviously, you know, talking a lot about, you know, his corners here, but he had a great win, big win for him, you know, taking on, you know, getting decision win against Benson Henderson, clear three rounds to nothing win for him. Joey Davis, he looked great in his decision win against Bobby Lee. So, and then of course, Rafael Stouts getting a decision win against Keith Lee. That was a good fight. If you did not have a chance to catch that fight, I would highly recommend going out there and watch that fight. Then, of course, in terms of the prelims, Jeremy Kennedy gets the decision win over Matt Bissett. J.J. Wilson only needing 20 seconds to score a knockout victory. Also, Jaleel Willis getting a unanimous decision win. And maybe we'll see if Bellator tries to go back to the, you know, the fight they initially booked with Jaleel Willis, taking on Patricky Pitbull. Of course, we all remember Patricky had to pull out of that fight on fight day. So Jaleel didn't get a chance to fight a couple weeks ago, but he gets a win last night. So overall, really good fight card for Bellator. And, you know, hopefully, I mean, I'm recording this show prior to UFC 255. So hopefully UFC 255 can deliver like Bellator did last night. Obviously, you know, talked a little bit about it on the last episode of the podcast. You know, this is a pay-per-view I'm not going to watch live. I'm going to be spending the next 2 days with my wife and our nieces. So we'll not be watching UFC 255 live. So hopefully it's a great fight card. And, you know, look, it's I think that, you know, if you tell me Alex Perez is a new UFC flyweight champion come Sunday morning, I would not be surprised. Now, I would be surprised if Jennifer Maya is if she's able to, you know, shock us all and defeat Valentina Shevchenko. She's an absolute huge favorite. So, you know, I'll be watching UFC 255 probably on Monday morning. You know, I'll have it on in the office. But, you know, it'll be interesting kind of see what the buy rate for that one is, because I think overall, top to bottom, it's a pretty good fight card. You know, but in terms of a premium product, I don't blame anybody who says that they're not going to order that. But, you know, speaking of the UFC, you're going to hear my next conversation. That's with Parker Porter. The heavyweight made his UFC debut earlier this year. Had a chance to chat with him a couple of days ago and to talk about his matchup coming up here next Saturday against Josh Parisian. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man that's going to have his second fight in the UFC coming up here at the end of the month, just after Thanksgiving. Parker Porter. Parker, man, appreciate the time, man. How's things been? Obviously, we haven't seen you now, you know, since August when you had your UFC debut. But hey, what's been going on since that matchup?
I just been working, man. Just plugging away, getting ready for this this next coming fight, and just making sure that I got all my ducks in a row and being fully prepared. You know, I got the call up. It was mid-pandemic situation, or it was just kind of like not super busy and diligent with my training. I was in the middle of changing gyms, you know, new 3-week-old baby, just kind of being like, well, you know, maybe I am definitely not expecting to get a call up to the UFC at the moment that I did. So I was a little more relaxed with my my regular protocols. And, you know, unfortunately, that definitely reflected in my performance on my debut. But it's going to be a completely different situation this time around.
Do you kind of, I mean, obviously with what the circumstances were, you know, last time, do you, in a way, do you kind of feel like this is more truly like your debut because you've had a proper camp, you know, you've been in a normal routine? Do you all kind of feel that way?
Yeah, I feel like this is definitely going to showcase what I can actually bring to the UFC way better than what I did last time. You know, it was, like I said, I was just so underprepared last time. With the current climate of the world in general going on, you know, like everything kind of being up in the air and wondering if events were even going to start happening again, and the UFC being the only ones really doing anything. I certainly didn't think I was going to be getting the call up at the time that I did. So I definitely, I kind of got caught with my pants down.
You know, obviously in the Northeast, I mean, everything's shutting down. I know a bunch of fighters are in the Northeast, and you know, they've kind of told me their story of kind of what this year has been like, of, you know, maybe you're going through a back door to get a training session in or whatnot. Has training looked like for you?
I mean, well, now everything's kind of opened back up and the restrictions have been pretty lax now, but they're talking about shutting things down again. So there was a 2 month, 3 month period there where like no gyms were open, and you know, like some gyms were open, but they were super secret about it. But then you heard like somebody ratted on somebody, and just a whole bunch of like cloak and dagger type crap where people were getting shut down, or like the, you know, state officials were showing up and being like, what are you doing? You're supposed to be shut down, and like fining people and stuff. So like the gym that I was at the time was just like, we're not playing, you know, we're not rolling the dice on anything. We got all these, this window front, there's no hiding anything. Like we really can't roll the dice on this one. So we were all just kind of asked out on, you know, a place to go and do what we do and be prepared. You know, and then, you know, one thing led to another. I eventually led to me changing locations. And now, you know, I feel like we're going to have a pretty solid situation and be ready no matter what happens.
You mentioned about how this is going to be a different Parker that we're going to see on the 28th, as opposed to what we saw there back in August. What would you say would be the biggest difference we will notice when we tune in and watch your fight?
Well, for one, I'm not cutting weight from 290 pounds this time around. You know, I'm walking around at about 270 right now, and I'm feeling really sharp. My cardio's on point. I don't think you're going to see me being very tentative at all. When I came out, you know, I was wary of Chris's hands, you know, and his ability to put somebody down quickly. You know, I didn't really press the action as quickly as I normally would. You know, I like to keep a busy pace, you know, and really just kind of be up in your face.
Is that, you know, in terms of being tentative and wanting to press the action, is that as much mental as it is physical?
I think the mental stems from the physical. If you know physically you're not where you should be or where you want to be, then mentally you're just not as confident in your ability to press it and you press the action and really kind of like hit the gas full throttle because you're worried about, you know, gassing out and ended up being that sloppy looking guy walking around like stumbling, trying to barely struggling to keep his hands up kind of situation, and then just getting your ass handed to you.
One more thing I want to mention before we get to your opponent is fighters who have gone through a fight in Vegas and understanding kind of, I mean, it's a different fight week than a normal fight week. Is there any takeaways you take away from that week of just kind of, you know, the obligation you had to do of, you know, the COVID test you had to do and, hey, I got to be here to do this, I got to be there to do that. Is there any takeaways that you'll take from that into this upcoming fight week that you'll alter kind of how you do things?
More so in the sense of like just now knowing what resources I have available to me during the course of the week. You know, UFC is such a step up from any local event that you've ever, you know, anybody's ever competed in, and the resources that they make available to you and how easy they kind of make everything for you to have whatever you need, whenever you need it, like right then and there, is on a whole nother level. They take such good care of the guys while you're out there. I wasn't expecting to have so much kind of like there for me as I did. Now that I know about all this stuff that's out there, I can kind of like rely on like, all right, I can go use this, you know, I can go to the PI and train over there. I can do this. I had these services available for recovery and stuff like that. So we're definitely going to capitalize on those. And I think it's going to help us kind of, maintain a higher level of output closer to the actual fight.
I know a lot of guys have taken advantage of the PI, and, you know, sometimes you sit down and you meet with the people there at the PI and they take a look at your body and they run, you know, tests on your body. I don't know if they've done that with you yet. And if they have,
yeah, no, I actually did it. Yep.
Was there something they said to you about, you know, like I remember talking to a fighter and their mentality was, I got to train 3 times a day. That's how I maximize performance. And then he goes to the PI and they're like, actually, you only need to do 2 times a day. Doing 3 times a day, you're actually wearing your body down. Is there anything they said to you about, okay, Parker, this is how to maximize your body and get the peak performance you want?
Well, one of the biggest things is they helped me get my diet on point. You know, they told me how I should be eating, how often, how many calories, you know, and like any specific type of supplements that I might need to help kind of like fill in the gaps there. as well as they I got three kids and I wake up at, 6:30 in the morning. And sometimes my last training session doesn't finish until 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. So, they take a look at your schedule and like the time frame that you're working with and trying to help condense your training into shorter periods and like maximize those windows, as well as like just figuring out specifically what areas you need to improve in the most or where you're lagging the most that could come up the quickest and easiest, and how to just generally make you a total package.
You saying about, getting the kids to school, getting up at 6:30. Has there been a time where actually you're ready to take the kids to school at 6:30, but then you open the door, all of a sudden the USADA guy's there. It's like, hey, Parker,
not at 6:30. Thank God. No, there have been a handful of times though, where I was, I'm working on opening up my own spot, to be doing private lessons and eventually have my own gym. But there were a couple of times where I was over there doing some work or getting some things done around there. And I get a phone call, saying, hey, we're at your house. And I'm like, shit. So I got to run back home. Thankfully, it's only 15 minutes. And the guys are like, they're super easy to work with. And they've been really, really understanding of everything, especially with the whole COVID thing going on. They've really just been a whole lot easier than what you hear about. like you have these kind of stigmatisms about these guys that they're like drill sergeants and they're just looking to flag you as quickly and easily as possible for anything they can. But really they're just out here doing their job. And most of the time, if you're like, hey man, I'll be there in 10 minutes. They're like, cool. I'll be here in my car for like, we're waiting for you.
Yeah. That's like the story I've always heard is basically just like, hey, if you say you're going to be here, just be here, Yeah. There's those stories where, they're very understanding, but you got Josh Parisian here. Obviously Josh has been around. He's a vet of the sport, just like yourself. Was he on your radar before, getting the call for this fight?
He actually was on my radar only because, both him and I had tried out for the Ultimate Fighter heavyweight season that he was just recently on, and we both made the final cut. And he had fought a friend of mine on the Dana White Contender Series, Greg Ribello, and then got picked up for the show. And then he went, he didn't make it to the UFC off the show. And then I saw him on the Contender Series again after I had just had my fight. And I go, you know what? In the back of my head, I go, they're going to match me up with him. He just won that fight. He just got his contract. I'm like, I'll guarantee you they're going to pair me up with that guy. And that's like 5 days later, I got the call.
They always talk about stylistically of why you like a fight. Is there something about what Josh presents of why you like this matchup?
I think it's just a really good opportunity for both of us to have a good fight. That's one thing, like, win, lose, or draw, I always want to have good fights. I don't want to just come out there and be like, it could have, like, you won, but the fight sucked. Or like, you lost and you got your ass handed to you, like, real bad. It was a total mismatch. I think we both match up to the point where this is going to be a good fight. And it's going to be entertaining for the fans, I think stylistically it's going to be a good battle, like it's really going to be kind of a quick draw, like see who gets their shots off quicker kind of thing.
I mean, obviously,
implements the game plan.
Yeah. I mean, obviously this is a sport of entertainment, and obviously like, this past weekend we had Arlovsky and Bozer was not the most fan friendly fight to watch. When you're in there and you feel like you're having that kind of fight, is there a balancing line for you of kind of like risk reward of, Do I go for something that may not be there?
No. I mean, when you're in that much of a stalemate, I feel like it's tough to just be like, screw it, I'm going in. I'll go for this or go for that or just, Hail Mary it kind of thing. I feel like those type of moves are more like, oh man, I'm definitely losing this fight and I need to pull a rabbit out of the hat right now. That's not so much like, oh, we're kind of at a stalemate and feeling each other out and this isn't like the most exciting fight. But those are the type of fights where things are so, they're such high level fights. It's difficult for the average fan to appreciate those kind of things because they're not seeing like this guy's, checking that or, like It's the one mistake that one of those guys makes that the other one's going to capitalize on immediately. And that's what you're trying to do, is make sure you don't make that one mistake.
Mm-hmm. Are you the type of fighter, do you think a lot inside the fight, or is it just more about just reading and reacting?
A little bit of both. I mean, it's like, it depends on the specific fight. Some fights I'm just kind of like in there, like, let's just go, let's bang. Yeah. Other fights I'm like, all right, I see this, I see that. I'm actually like present and thinking. And then some fights you're just kind of like tunnel vision. Like, I got the opportunity to do this. Just go, there it is. Get it. You know, you just, everything blacks out and you zoom right in on that one target.
Now, at the Apex, it's the smaller cage, 25-foot cage, which is pretty much a cage we see on the regional scene everywhere.
Right, yeah.
Do you prefer that smaller cage?
What?
Do you prefer it? Like, if they sat there and said, hey, Parker, you got a choice, 25-footer or a 30-footer, would you pick the 25-footer?
Honestly, to me, like you said, most of the regional fight promotions don't have cages any bigger than that. Like, I think a lot of the cages I fought in were 20 feet. Across. So when they're like, oh, you've got the small cage, it's only 25 feet across, I was like, that's freaking huge. You know, so I couldn't even imagine how big it feels to be in the 30-foot cage. So I don't really have a preference at this point, because I haven't fought in anything bigger than the 25-footer, and that's been the biggest one I've fought in yet, and I felt like I had tons of room to move around in there. So
yeah, I know. I remember they put out a diagram at one point, you know, over the past couple of months, so just showing the differences. And like, you think, oh, it's 5 feet, like, that's not much. But then, no, like, when you actually see the dimensions, you're like, man, that is a 5 feet's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah. You don't realize how much extra square footage there is to the rest of the ring. You're just thinking about that one point of, you know, like, oh, it's 5 feet further, but then it's 5 feet further across as well, yeah, like in every direction. You know, you're not thinking about that part of it all.
Yeah, I know. But it does seem the smaller cage does present more action, I guess, because there's not really a lot of room for you to run around. I mean,
yeah, there's no room to run around. Well, there's less room to run around. You know, exactly. Like I said, I still feel like even in the 25-foot cage, I still feel like I got pretty good amount of room to move and dance around in there. But I can't physically, like, turn around and run. There's not enough room to do that.
And, of course, we're going to be able to see you do your thing here on November the 28th against Josh Parisian, UFC Vegas number 15. Parker, I appreciate the time. Of course, let me know anything. Follow you on social media. And, of course, if there's anything else you want to mention, the floor is yours, man.
I'm good, man. I just got to say, you know, shout out to my wife, because she's really like the biggest superstar of this camp with taking care of the baby and really making sure that I'm able to get some sleep. I just shouting out my corners and my close training partners, Dan Frejcek, Kia Galampour, my wrestling coach, and my head coach, Ed Thornton, over at Thornton's Martial Arts and Fitness.
And there was my conversation with Parker Porter. I appreciate him taking some time out of his day to talk to me about his fight coming up here next week at the UFC Fight Night card in Vegas. Going to be taking on Josh Parisian. Very interesting to kind of hear him talk about, you know, walking around at a lighter weight this time as opposed to that short notice fight. Also talked about how Josh Parisian has been on his radar for some time, you know, going back to when, you know, his friend Greg Rebello, you know, fought Parisian on the Contender Series. And then, of course, you know, after Parisian getting, you know, getting a win, you know, to get into the UFC, he sat there and said that, you know, he is going to, he just kind of felt that was going to be his opponent. So look forward to seeing that fight next week. Of course, that's going to be the fight card that's going to be headlined by Curtis Blaydes and Derek Lewis. Kind of, I will tell you, that's a fight that when it got booked, I was kind of, it was one of those fights I shook my head a little bit about, you know, just because, you know, I mean, you kind of feel like, you know, that's probably gonna be a fight where Curtis Blaydes is gonna look to try to get the fight to the ground, where Derek Lewis is gonna try to keep that fight up on the feet. Just looking at the press release from the UFC in terms of this event, you got Bill Algeo had a fun fight in his UFC debut. He's taking on Spike Carlisle. That should be a pretty fun fight to watch there between those two guys. Should be an action-packed kind of fight. You know, also Renato Moicano, he'll be on that card. We'll get into more of that next week here on the podcast. So be sure to check that out right here on, whether you're listening to this maybe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, radioinfluence.com, the MMAreport.com, so many places that you can listen to this podcast. Of course, this podcast does come out 2 times a week. Typically, will come out on Sundays and Wednesdays. Going to get the Sunday podcast out a little earlier than we typically get that out there, because I do want to get that conversation I have with Mike Mazzulli, since that is so fresh, and let everyone hear exactly why Mike Mazzulli made the ruling that he did make there. Of course, be sure to give me a follow on social media, Twitter and Instagram. It is both at @Jason_Floyd. So that's going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which you can always check out on your favorite podcasting platform and radioinfluence.com.
This is a Landry Football Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
There was a USA Today article that came out about problems over at LSU that were pertaining to sexual assaults that have taken place over a period of time. It's a bad look, and we're going to let the investigators figure that out, and that's exactly what's going on right now. Speaking with a LSU administrator, a couple of them yesterday, one of them on the overall university side, the biggest thing that I learned in that conversation was the Greek organizations, which I, look, when I was in college, I was a student assistant coach. So I, you know, wasn't involved in the Greek life and never was. A lot of people are. But apparently there's a lot of issues, and they're maybe on the verge of locking the doors on Greek life on campus at LSU. It was so bad, and a lot of that has come out into this. I think the thing that's best understood is that with sexual assault, obviously through the investigation, it's apparently very, very difficult for the ladies, women to have to deal with. They get questioned almost as they're put on trial, and a lot of them feel shamed, guilty, and I've learned this from people that are in that industry. And so a lot of times they don't go through with the claim, and the issue of whether it happened or not needs to be determined by people that will study the facts, look at it, and then take it to trial if that's where it's going to go. And I'm going to leave that to those that are skilled to do that. What I can say that's concerning is the fact that there appears to be quite a bit of evidence that as this was reported, it was reported by the victim, but then it didn't go where it needed to go into the chain of command onto the LSU campus.
The Landry Football Podcast with veteran scout and coach Chris Landry can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.